This is...
Well, here we are.
Felger.
What?
And Mass.
The whole team sucks.
Felger and Mass.
Maybe your part in the back is a little bit loose.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Hey, Felger Mass here, 98.5, the Sports Hub FM dial in Boston, simulcast across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. When we do the update there at the top of the hour, meaning right at 4 o'clock, NBC Sports Boston goes away for their own update, and they don't hear the radio side on the update. So the simulcast audience, Murray, did not hear what you just said. What Karen Garigian reported today at training camp, it ties directly into what we were just talking about Belichick and Brady. Can you please repeat?
Yes. An hour into the first day of Patriots training camp, hard not to be drawn into a scene playing out by the tackling dummies flanking the two practice fields. Bill Belichick had his back up against one of the dummies and was having a fairly animated conversation with his quarterback. Tom Brady, who had his helmet off, listened intently, nodded a bunch of times to whatever points his coach was making from afar. Belichick, who gestured quite a bit with his hands during the conversation, perhaps to make a point or emphasize what was being discussed, held court for several minutes with his four-time Super Bowl MVP. The subject really doesn't matter. This was more on-field interaction than the two had had during 3 days of minicamp last month. Much more. It was the first time they were each in each other's personal space during a meaningful practice for the 2018 season. When the conversation ended, they split up. Belichick headed towards the main field, Brady towards the secondary field. The chat seemed amicable enough.
Okay, so I like you're mocking it. I don't think it's like to me it's important. I mean, small I.
I'm just saying,
just
adding a little inflection.
Like, I mean, were they ever going to talk? Were they ever going to speak to each other?
See, but I'm interested in knowing that it never happened during minicamp. Like, you know, I never saw anything written or said about it.
But this is why I said it's like the first little sign, small letters, is that they're going to have some sort of interaction. To this point, there hasn't even been any interaction. And if you don't think that's significant, Bill is notorious for just like, you know, you hear all these stories in Foxborough. He'll pass you in the hall, you know. And, you know, not even look up at you, not even like, who are you? Never mind say anything to you. Like, not even acknowledge your existence or even pretend to know who you are. People he works with every day, like, he's notorious for that. So even if you're working together, quote unquote, he'll shut you down and shut you out. And, you know, so it's like he couldn't possibly keep doing that with Brady if that's where they are at all, and vice versa. Like, that's just not functional. You know, to me, what the real story is, I guess I'm just blabbering around the real point, is even if they don't come together, even if they don't love each other, even if they don't have a full understanding, it has to be a functional working relationship.
Sure.
And I think there's been times here where it hasn't felt very functional. I'm sorry, that Malcolm Butler decision was not a functional football decision. And the way they traded Jimmy Garoppolo was not a functional football organization, the way it operates. So I think there's been some dysfunction there. And Brady, your starting quarterback, blowing off all offseason? I'm sorry, that's dysfunctional. When a starting quarterback doesn't show up for passing camps, that is not a functional organization. That's not a sign of functionality. So just them talking, okay, baby steps, I'll take it.
Sure, yeah, look, every little bit. I see, but I had faith in their ability to do the football part of it. Like, to me, you know, the practices and the games, I think they both kind of go into autopilot on that. And when I say autopilot on that, I mean they've been around each other so long, they both ultimately have the same goals, that I think that's the easy part, like on the field. And I also think, like, the story you're telling about Belichick in the hallway, the football field's where he's most comfortable, don't you think? Like, out there, he's in charge, he's the guy. So, like, it makes sense to me that he would communicate to Brady on the football field. But the rest of the time, I don't know. I still worry about that it's going to affect them. I don't know that they're...
And who knows what was really being said here. Again, Belichick gestured quite a bit with his hands during the conversation, perhaps to make a point or emphasize what was being discussed. I'm the one in charge, Tom. Get it through your thick skull.
And that quack of a doctor does not step foot on my practice field.
Right.
Right? You know, something like that.
Pointing, putting the hands together. Yeah. Trying to emphasize, hammer home. There's a chain of command. I'm at the top. You hear me?
Or is he groveling? What do you want me to do, Tom? You're 40. I had to draft the next guy. I had to develop the next guy. Why are you holding that against me? I'm doing my job.
Yeah, like the arms wide open.
Yes.
So what if I always continue to text the guy I think is better than you, your successor? I'll text him every single week this season. Get over it, you diva.
Yeah, right. I don't want you to go to the owner and stab me in the back.
So who the heck knows? At least they're talking. At least there's at least there's some communication. Oh, we still having fun with Bill Belichick's text out to Jimmy Garoppolo, though, Jimmy?
Yo, Jimmy, watching tape of today's game, naked in front of computer, LOL. Just kidding, fam. Your play makes me so proud. Want to trade pictures? Eggplant emoji. Send.
Maybe Brady's giving him some numbers so he can get in on that text exchange, yeah. You know?
Is that a kicking tee in your pants? Are you happy to see me?
All right, so we've got that. We've got the Red Sox at the deadline. Are they losing ground to the Yankees? Not in the standings, but on the roster because they can't match the Yankees at the trade deadline. The Yankees trade for J.A. Happ today. J.A. Happ, as I told you before, since 2015 against the Red Sox, and not that we would ever draw a line arbitrarily, it's just, you know, that's a round number, 2015. Since 2015 against the Red Sox, 10 starts, 1.78 ERA. Red Sox batting average of 202. It's a Red Sox killer. That's a Red Sox guy. That's a Red Sox matchup guy.
I mean, I've always liked Happ. I mean, even when he came up with the Phillies, I thought he was sort of a knockoff version of Hamels. You know, like, I thought he was that kind of guy. He never really panned out, but he had a couple good years in there.
Ryan and Andover, your thoughts on Happ to the Yankees?
Hey, yeah, you guys would never draw a line to fit your agenda, right?
No, never, never, never. Just that was a totally straight line right there.
Right, just because, like, David Price's Tampa stats against the Yankees, those are nothing because they're not in the rivalry. But J.A. Happ is a totally different ballgame. You guys should be quivering at the acquisition of J.A. Happ. All I'm going to say is, look, J.A. Happ in a vacuum is a decent deal for them, but knock it off with the intimidation factor.
So, I don't know. I never used the word intimidating.
Me neither.
I just know the Yankees, well, they didn't get worse with that trade.
No, so again, look at it from the standpoint of what we were talking about.
This guy has a great deal of success against you. So that's just, I mean, those are facts. Sorry.
I mean, all he has to do is give them 5 innings because their bullpen's loaded. So they don't have to get the same quality of start. They're going to get more at the back end of the game. So, and look, maybe this is part of the, if the Red Sox end up making a big deal for a reliever, we may look at the Eovaldi thing the same way. They may look at Eovaldi and say, you know what, we're going to put him in the rotation because it'll allow us to put Price in the bullpen. And then we're going to end up better that way, and they might be right. I mean, I just, the notion that Dave Dombrowski would sit there and try to tell you that they'd prefer Nathan Eovaldi over Zach Britton.
It's what he did.
To me is like...
Are you sure he doesn't... He's not telling the truth?
No, I don't
think so. Because this remains something that's not being explored enough. Is that if he's actually on the level, and that's really true, that they just as easily could have had Britton as Eovaldi. It was their choice. They had more than enough ammo, according to Dave Dombrowski, to do it. But Eovaldi was a better fit. That needs to be explored more. Why don't you just stop calling people liars? We'll stop calling Dombrowski a liar and say, okay, you're telling the truth. You're speaking on the level. So you'd rather have Eovaldi than Britton? I mean, let's just do that. I mean, you can get more material out of that. Because lying is lying. That's just a PR thing. That's Red Sox, you know, again, trying to control the narrative with their PR spin. The other thing is far more damning. Really? Eovaldi over Britton? So it's so absurd you can't even bring yourself to believe
it. No, I can't. I can't bring myself. And honestly, Dombrowski's not that dumb. You know, if you were, he's smart. He's a smart guy. But if you approached him with that question, just the way you phrase it, so you'd rather have Eovaldi than Britton? You know what he would say? Well, because he answers every, well, you know, you have to factor in cost. Oh, all right. Well, that's right. We have to factor in cost. I forgot. So really then it's not, so the fit includes the cost, the acquisition cost of the player. That's the type of thing you're saying. There's no way anybody can convince me they would rather have Eovaldi than Britton. Just no way. Not a million years.
Okay, but then don't read the Boston Globe. That's all I'm telling you. You don't want to read the Globe. We'll pick this up on the other side with you. Don't go anywhere.
Felger and Mez. The Sports Hub. Felger and Mez.
I love it.
You were right, Mez.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Well, we talked to them. mean, I guess that's all I would say. I mean, I think some of the part of it, we really like this fit for us.
The Waffle?
Yes.
Did you say if you felt like you had the power to make that trade if you wanted
to? Yes, we did.
So you like the Waldy. Did you feel kind of like that this was the priority, the getting the starter over the
Well, I mean, I don't mean to downplay because he's a very good pitcher, but for us, we think the fit was better to get someone like this.
Don't want to downplay Britton because he's a very good pitcher. But we think the fit was better to get someone like this. And some of the reporting, Dombrowski and the Sox tried to make it clear that they were working on Eovaldi well before the Yankees were in on Britton, or had it just about hammered out, and it was just the physicals that took another couple hours overnight for them to announce a trade Wednesday morning versus Tuesday night. Again, sort of trying to let everybody know that we were in on Eovaldi before Britton and we wanted Eovaldi before Britton. So they're keen on that. They're keen on selling that part of it, that we had the ammo, the power, I think was the way it was, the question was phrased, the power, the ammo, to get Britton. But this was the priority. This was a better fit.
Yeah, I think that had the Orioles told them that they needed Jalen Beeks in the deal, that Jalen Beeks had been going to Baltimore. That's what I think. Like, so to me, and look, they're especially sensitive to it, you know, like we were saying earlier, that they're sensitive to the whole idea that they don't have the artillery to make these big trades. I think the thing that compounds it in this case is that it was the Yankees. Like, the Yankees swooped in and got him. And I say swooped in, so I don't know, maybe the Yankees had a deal in place and the Red Sox were given a final chance to match and they couldn't match or didn't want to match or whatever. Like, I don't know how all the particulars of it went down. But the fact that it was the Yankees on top of it, when everybody knows, everybody in baseball knows, the Yankees have more money in terms of flexibility, not in terms of actual cash, right? In terms of luxury tax flexibility, the Yankees have more and they have more to deal. So if you get in any bidding war with the Yankees over any player, you're going to lose. Because ultimately, if they want to go to the lengths to get the player, they're going to get him. And the Red Sox just don't have that kind of artillery anymore. To me, that's the downside of doing what Dombrowski has done. He just traded away too many pieces. So they don't have the... Now, you can tell me that they have a couple of good prospects at the lower levels, and they do. But again, those guys are how far away? Like, how do you know that they're really prospects?
It's also disingenuous because, you know, did the Red Sox have the ammo? Well, of course. I mean, if you gave Baltimore Raffy Devers or, you know, again, the pitcher that the Yankees gave up, the linchpin to the Yankees deal was their sixth-ranked prospect. If the Red Sox, and oh, by the way, Jalen Beeks was the Red Sox sixth-ranked prospect. So you're telling me, as you just mentioned, if you had offered Jalen Beeks as the lead item, that would have gotten it done?
No.
No way. So you would have had to have take something off your major league roster that you didn't want to give up. Or let's say your first prospect. So to match the Yankees' sixth guy, you would have had to give up your first guy because your system is so depleted.
Dylan Tate's the guy you're talking about with the Yankees.
Okay. Former first-round pick just a couple of years ago, like, and that's their number six guy. So if you, for to get you to match, you had to offer your number one prospect versus their number six. Well, yes, you had the ammo, but that's not a fair comparison. That's not saying, no, you would have to have overpaid internally to match the Yankees. So which you have to know is the situation, but they're so sensitive to the fact. They're so, because the criticism hits close to the bone. Their organization is depleted, and there's also a big money factor with them, with this, you know, with that luxury tax. And so is he implying all that with fit? When he says fit, that's what it means?
So I think so.
It's the money thing.
Yeah, I think that they just, you know, given where they are, they had to make a smaller deal. I just would, the idea that he is so sensitive to the Britton thing, you know, and when I say the Britton thing, the whole idea that they didn't have the firepower to make the deal. They don't have the depth to make that deal from. They don't. That's what they don't have it. It's clear.
Okay, and they're sensitive to it, so he lies. So it's a PR spin. If you don't like that, if you don't like us calling the Red Sox liars or that they're spinning you or that they're then let's just go with the fact he's telling the truth then, which is worse for you. You don't want to believe the truth because if he's telling the truth, that you could have just as easily had Zach Britton as Nathan Eovaldi, then what does that say about you? How do you feel about that decision? You could have easily had one over the other, and you chose Eovaldi over Britton? So it's one of the two. Either they're lying or he chose Eovaldi over Britton.
Yeah, I think that they are, you know, covering up their own insecurities. I don't mean, you know, the word lie, I guess, is strong. Is that it?
Well,
Maybe I use it too much.
No, I'm just saying that, well, I mean you want to take people at their word, right?
Yeah, but see, in sports, I don't. I mean, and again, I'm not telling you Dave Dombrowski does something that other teams don't. They all lie. They all do. So again, when I say it's a lie, I don't know. Maybe that's too harsh. I probably opened my mouth too much.
But with the Red Sox, it is off-putting, man.
Did you go soft on the day off?
What are you talking about?
You don't want to use the word lie? It's a lie. Say it's a lie.
Okay. Maybe I've gone soft, Mario.
Well, no, but it is off-putting. And then there's like a campaign. And then like their newspaper, it's, you know, headline on Nick Cafardo's column. In trading for Nathan Eovaldi, the Red Sox pulled off a coup. Like it was some sort of massive upset, some sort of...
I mean, you may as well put Dave Dombrowski in an aircraft carrier with a banner that says mission accomplished on it, for God's sakes.
I mean, that's...
Like, we won the trade deadline.
It's a coup that they traded for someone that, let's face it, most of you never heard of. Or if you had heard of him, you didn't know where he was or what he was doing.
From 2 years ago when he was with the Yankees. That's
like,
maybe.
Sort of who? I kind of know that guy. Where is he? That's a coup?
That is a lie.
Oh, that's awesome. Or Alex Speer. Red Sox headline, Red Sox traded for Eovaldi without giving up a premier prospect. Like, see? They have the ammo to pull off these deals.
What? Lie.
What?
Lie.
What
deals? That's a lie. It's what? A complete lie.
Alex's lead, a Red Sox farm system described by many in baseball as one of the weakest in the game, nonetheless has already allowed the team to make two deals in hopes of achieving the sort of complementary upgrades that can make a difference in October. See?
That is a lie.
Oh, you!
All right, Jimmy, I'll go back to you.
You idiots who thought we didn't have a system. We've already made two major upgrades. It's like, the lying is compounded by the Globe, like, and the team-owned newspaper. It's like, come on.
You know, I remember when this ownership took over, right? All they did was pan the Red Sox farm system for sucking so bad, right? Then they traded away a million of the minor leaguers for all these prospects. And I remember asking John Henry, if the system sucks so bad, how are you able to trade all these guys? And he said, we did it in spite of it. Or something to that effect. It's like, no matter what, they always come out ahead. So in this case, I just would have had much more respect for Dombrowski. I have a problem with the whole lying thing. I do. I hate it when Belichick does it. I hate it when Dombrowski does it. I would rather you pick nicer, softer words and talk around it than try to feed me some bullcrap.
Or don't answer it.
Right, exactly, which is essentially what I'm saying. In this case, you go, well, hey, look, you know, we talked to a lot of teams about a lot of different players.
We're doing the best we can.
Sometimes they work, sometimes we don't, but we did get a guy that we think can help our team. Boom, done. You didn't say anything, that's all. Instead of, oh, no, we could have made that deal. Oh, shut up. Would you already put a sock in it, for crying out loud? If you could have made the deal, you would have made it. Quit being so sensitive.
There you are.
There.
That is a lie.
Thank you. Oh, I got Maz back there for a second. Where'd you go? Jeff in the car, go ahead. What are your thoughts?
You know, it's just amazing to me how, like, a year and 3 months after the NBA trade, NBA draft of last year, I heard very much the same argument. Oh, you know, Danny Ainge is lying. He didn't think that Tatum was the best guy in the draft. He just decided to make that move so he could get a pick and everything. And then just look at how that worked out. So, you know what? Stop freaking jumping down Dombrowski's throat about this. You know what? We didn't think that Tatum was going to be better than Fultz last year.
So hold on. Did we just stop saying that? I never
whoever
said that.
Whoever said that?
I like that trade. I didn't want the kid that lost to Yale. If you listen to our show, I had no problem with that trade. I never said what you are ascribing me to have said, Jeff.
I said that.
I know.
I hated Fultz. Or I loved Fultz.
All right. I didn't. I didn't.
So did the rest of the NBA cartel. Okay. They loved Fultz. So they didn't care about Tatum.
Okay. But I never said that if he was yelling at me.
I just like that you got blamed for my take.
It's always the best, isn't it? You get someone else in trouble. But his other thing, I'm not telling you they lost his trade. Again, I would trade Jalen Beeks for Nathan Eovaldi. It feels like Eovaldi has a higher ceiling and you can get more out of the guy. So great, good trade. It's the whole spin on the backside of it. It's the whole spin on the backside that now we could have done that other thing, but we wanted this guy because they're embarrassed of their system or they're embarrassed of the criticism they've been getting of their system. So then they have to spin this thing, which again, Matt, so I want to take him at his face value. I want to believe him. So then let's really assess. So I wanted to ask the caller, you'd rather have Nathan Eovaldi than Jack Britton. Fine. Maybe you'll be right about that. Maybe you'll be wrong. But if that's what it is, if he's telling the truth, then let's discuss that. You'd rather have Nathan Eovaldi than Jack Britton. Maybe that is the smart thing to do. I don't know.
I think if you raise that issue, that what Dombrowski would then say is, well, you got to factor in cost. You got to factor in years of control because they're going to have a rotation issue next year. They're going to need starters.
Eovaldi, I thought Eovaldi was up after this year.
I think he has an option. I thought I read that there's an option on his contract.
Well, if he has an option, he's
no,
out.
No, not him. They.
Oh, they still have a...
That there's a club option on his contract.
Got it.
I meant to say it. So I'll double check that. I thought I read that somewhere. So to me, if there's an option on his contract, well, then there's their out. You know, they're going to lose Pomeranz. They don't have any minor leaguers coming up ready to pitch in the big leagues because as we saw, Jalen Beeks, he's not there yet. And I'm not sure he's ever going to be there. So what do they have to do? They got to go out and get free agents. So why not get one now? Like I almost feel like they made the deal as much for next year as this one, which again is okay. That's okay. I think that on face value, the Eovaldi trade, good move. I got no issue with that move. Eovaldi's a serviceable big league pitcher. I don't think Beeks is. And if you get him for an extra year and you can stick him at the end of the rotation, good. Excellent. All the power to you.
What if Beeks would have gotten you Zach Britton?
Oh, then you get Zach Britton. You go make that deal. See, no, I don't think that was available to them. But this idea that like, well, we could have done that. But, you know, we didn't like that deal. Yeah, you know, Britton comes with questions. Oh, okay, fine. Well, then what the hell were you talking to him at all for? Like, they're so just so full of it. It's years of buildup when, you know, and it's not necessarily Dombrowski, although he's worse. To me, he's like the John Farrell of GMs in a lot of ways. Would you buy a car? Murray, you've described him as a used car salesman.
Yes, many times.
Okay. Not only would I not buy a car from him, I wouldn't buy a pair of socks from that guy. I wouldn't buy underwear or t-shirts from that guy.
A t-shirt? Come on.
No, I can get t-shirts right down the hall in the promotions department down here.
Here's Murray's update, and then we're right back.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every afternoon, Felger and Maz bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Red Sox acquired Nathan Eovaldi to bolster their pitching staff. But make no mistake, they could have had Zach Britton if they wanted to, according to Dave Dombrowski.
Well, we talked to them.
So I'm with Maz. I usually rebel against getting spun by the team. I feel exact same way you do. Especially when then there's state-run media. Again, that's Nesson. They traded for Eovaldi, but make no mistake, they could have had Britton.
Well, we talked to them.
Well.
It's like, okay.
Well.
All right. If you're going to shove that down my throat, I'll take it as gospel.
We talked to them.
I'll take it as the truth then. So you chose Nathan Eovaldi over Zach Britton. Let's see how that works out. Maybe you're right. Maybe that'll work out for you. I don't want to hear, though, that if Nathan Eovaldi gets his teeth kicked in and Zach Britton helps the Yankees advance to the World Series, that, well, what do you want the Red Sox to do, Felger? They didn't have the ammo to get him. No. Told over and over by the Red Sox media that they had more than enough to make that Zach Britton trade. So they could have done it. I don't want to hear that.
Well... We talked to them.
This is a choice that they made, according to Dave Dombrowski. Or they're just lying through their teeth and they had no shot at Britton because they didn't have the ammo, which they don't want to admit. So it's one or the other.
See, there's nothing that pisses me off more than somebody talking to me like I'm stupid. So now look, I don't necessarily dispute the fact that I am. Okay. But so I understand it. I understand that sometimes it's a reasonable observation to make. But I remember years ago, a member of media relations, who I'm not going to say what team this person was with, once pulled me aside and said, look, we royally effed this one up. I mean, we just so, don't quote me on this, okay? But we just completely screwed up, so do what you gotta do, and walked away. And I remember thinking, boom, piece of cake. There you go, nice and easy, no issues, no arguments, no problem, thank you and goodbye. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Like, nice and easy. No, no, don't just, don't feed me the bullcrap. I hate the bullcrap.
Owen in Boston has a thought on Evaldi. Go ahead, Owen.
Hey, guys. So, if it truly came down to Britain and Evaldi, then Dombrowski porked that one, because Evaldi's got nasty stuff, but it's very hittable. I mean, the year he got traded to, before he got traded to the Yankees, he led the league in hits. He's always had ERAs over fours, but he routinely throws over 100 miles an hour. And Maz, his contract was had it was a option for this year, so he's a free agent at the end of the year.
Oh, all right, I get it backwards then.
So his stuff, again, I mean, I can't remember. I remember the name. I remember seeing him in Tampa or, you know, the Yanks that year, I guess. Like, but so I don't remember the stuff, but I, you know, the report, 97.
No, no, he throws hard. Yeah, he throws hard. I remember that when he was with the Yankees.
And right-handers have bad numbers against him.
Yeah.
So, like, I like 97 against right-handed hitters out of the bullpen.
Sure, especially the Yankees lineup.
And so, or and if and he proves to be a good starter, I'll start him. I don't, you know, the stuff seems intriguing to me. So fine, fine.
In and of itself, it's not a bad deal.
But if I could have had Zach Britton, I think I'm taking Zach Britton.
Yeah, see, I just, this is where the Red Sox go too far. If they just keep it for what it is, which is we're taking a flyer on a guy with a good arm. It didn't cost us anything. He's good against righties, and the Yankees have Stanton. The Yankees have Judge. They're probably going to have Sanchez. So you know what? We want righty. We want a righty that can get those guys out in a big spot. We're going to take our chances. Fine. No problem. Makes all the sense in the world. I told you. I like the Steve Pierce move. I know what Pierce is. That guy's a functional hitter against left-handed pitching. You did all right there. No problem. It's not a grand slam, but it's a solid single. Fine. No problem. I'll take it. But once you start saying the Zach, once you start comparing it to the Zach Britton deal, that's where you lose me.
Tim and Marble. Hi, Tim.
What's up, guys? Look, you know, speaking of the state-run media, where's the article that says Red Sox having best season, but rest of the league sucks? I can't listen to it every week with, you know, between Nesson and the Globe. On pace for this, franchise that. It's getting to the point, I can't watch a game unless they're playing New York, Houston, or Cleveland. And so I ask you this. You know, sports is always at its best when you got L.A., New York, Boston, and that's what you got in baseball. Is the how crappy the league is that overshadowing the great arms race we have going on?
It is here. Yeah. In this studio, Murray, where's your asterisk?
Yeah, I left it in the car, but it still exists. That whiteboard is in the trunk, and it's what now? 71 still? 71 wins and counting with the asterisk.
And with good reason. Like
the Orioles are 42.5 games behind you.
Do they even have 30 wins yet?
42.5.
29 wins, Tony.
There you go. They haven't won 30 games.
And we're a good 3 weeks into like three useless weeks of baseball.
Oh my God. It's July. 42.5 games. I mean, that number just blows me away.
Gigantic.
I'm sorry. So, I mean, really, that's a tough watch. Like, that's a tough thing to invest in when one team is 42.5 games behind the other.
Well, and again, there's been a lot of that. Maybe not as bad as Baltimore, but like you go across Kansas City.
Oh, God.
Texas? Texas is 42-61. The Royals are 31-70. You want to watch a good race in baseball? The Orioles and the Royals. That's a good one. Let's see who can lose the most because they both suck. The Royals have 70 losses. They're 31-70. The Orioles are 29-73. The race for the number one pick? Now that's a race. The rest of it? Absolute, complete, total dog crap. The White Sox, 36-65. They blow too. Like how many teams really, really blow? Like I'm talking suck eggs blow. They're horrendous, these teams. So the Red Sox have this stretch of games against all this absolute Alpo dog food freaking across the league, and it's one series after the next. And you're supposed to get excited that they win a game 8-4? Because that one was reasonably close? It's complete dog food. The league is dog food.
Okay, we have this on the table. We've got Bill Belichick today with some more items really off-season items that he talked about. Let's give you coming up next to the Josh McDaniels story and how he came back and Bill's role in bringing him back and his current role on the team and has that changed. You'll hear from Bill Belichick on those items right after these words.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5. Sports Hub.
I think there's a lot there, and I think that Josh McDaniels is sort of an X factor in all this. And, you know, I think the biggest reason that he came back was, from people that I've talked to, it was he finally heard from the Patriots, and people weren't specific about that, how much he was valued there. To that point, he didn't, you know how Bill is. Bill's just worried about the season. He doesn't want to say, oh, Josh, don't go interview with them. Like, I see
you. Is that horse blinded, huh?
Yes, he does not. Bill does not care about any of that stuff. So Josh probably didn't hear anything. He went and interviewed, got the job, whatever. And then all of a sudden, the season ends. And, you know, the way I hear it, it was mostly a craft production. And Bill didn't have a whole lot of input. But I'm sure Bill's fine with it.
It's Greg Bedard on the Midday Show today. Beadle and Zolak. Zolak and Bertrand. Maz, what did you say in the middle of that cut?
I said Bedard sitting there saying that Bill doesn't care about, you know, McDaniels going somewhere else. So, you know, he doesn't care about that kind of stuff. He cared when Mangini went to the Jets. He locked him out of the facility and changed his security card, for crying out loud. So I think Bill cares about everything. That's what I think.
And I don't buy for one second. Nor do I think that it's... So this is one of these things. Either it's not true, or if it is true, it's not a good sign that Bill doesn't discuss it during the season. Like, to me, it feels like that whole Josh McDaniels thing feels like there was, again, that's another sign of borderline dysfunction. Another one. You pull the guy off the plane, he accepts the offer, and you almost literally yank him off the private plane on the way. Does that sound like an organization that's communicating well?
No.
I mean, there's one thing to focus on, you know, 1 week at a time in the game at hand. Like, I get all that. But don't tell me they're not discussing futures. When I covered the team, Charlie Weiss took a job at Notre Dame, and Romeo Crennel took a job in Cleveland during the season. They took the job. So you're saying Bill didn't talk about that with Charlie or Romeo? That's nonsense. And what does it take? You don't spend every waking second of every waking day talking about that game. You don't got 2 minutes to spare to say, yeah, Indy's interested. What do you think? Now, come on with that. Like, that's just... That's too much for me to believe. If everyone's on the same page and everything's functioning normally, doesn't Josh have an inkling of what's there for him in the offseason?
Sure.
And the Patriots know it, and the Patriots would know their plan of what they want with their coaching staff going forward. They would know Bill's plan, Brady's plan, what we want going forward. Do we need the next coach in waiting? And it's all I thought this team was always one step ahead of everybody else. What happened to that? Sounds to me like the season ended and their pants were on fire. Oh, Josh is going to take a job? Well, wait a minute. Wait, Brady wants to keep him? Okay, well, hold on. No. Josh, come back here. Like, that's not being one step of everybody else. He yanked him off the plane. So, like, I reject the fact that they weren't talking. And if they weren't, they should be. When you had those big seismic offseason things, changing of coaches, changing of coordinators, get on the same page. Take a second out of your week just to hammer that out so you're not left there sit with your schmenzer in your hand when the season ends. That's not being unfocused. That's ridiculous. And no, and Bedard, love you, mean it, but come on. They don't have 2 minutes to talk about a job offer coming from Indianapolis? Again, in 2004, they had guys taking jobs before the season were over. They finished out the year with Charlie already signed, sealed, and delivered to Notre Dame and Rack gone to Cleveland. And they somehow won the championship that year, going 14-2. So please, come on with that crap. No, there was little slivers of dysfunction on this team in the last couple of years, and that's just another little sign of it. That thing with Josh. And so Kraft brought him back, not Belichick.
See, this to me makes me wonder about the relationship between Bill and Josh, and today's answer on McDaniels didn't do anything to necessarily fortify my level of confidence.
Okay, and... So it's Kraft, not Belichick, bringing back the offensive coordinator. Is it because Kraft needs protection against Belichick leaving? Maybe. should be part of it. You need a next coach. You should have that mapped out. You traded away the next quarterback. You might as well keep the next coach. Or, and both, is it Tom Brady saying, don't let me, would you get someone between me and this a-hole? Because I'm sick of working with this guy. And so McDaniels is brought in as a buffer for Brady, and Kraft has to go chase him down because Brady says to Daddy, I need my guy. Bring him back. And yeah, so they bring him back.
Yeah, go get my nine-nine. I mean, I need my security blanket.
So all of that, like, that's all on the table, all possible. Maybe it's all true. And that's, again, is all sort of just borderline dysfunctional. So Belichick was asked about some of this today. How about the Giardi exchange? We can hear the question. Again, the questions are sort of hard to hear, so work with me on this. But Giardi asked Belichick about a couple of these items.
With regards to Josh, obviously people assume he was taking the Colts job. How much of a bump is that for you to be able to get him back on the staff and in the same role?
I've had a long relationship with Josh and a good one. I think he's a great coach. I love working with Josh.
What sort of role did you play in bringing him back?
Yeah, you have to talk to Josh about Josh's situation, his decision-making, and all that. That's a question for him. I can't answer that.
Okay, so the questions were, how do you feel about Josh coming back, and what role did you play in bringing him back? And he wanted nothing to do with that second one.
Because he had no part in bringing him back. If he did, he would have said something there. That answer, that just proves he had nothing to do with Josh McDaniels' return.
Well, see, to me, and again, no matter how the whole thing's, you know, how it's all parceled out in terms of whether it was Kraft or Brady, either way, it wasn't Bill. And it feels like McDaniels is on that side of the line. So Bill's standing on his side because McDaniels is wanted by the owner. McDaniels is wanted by the quarterback. And so if there is this rift, if you believe that, and I believe something's been going on down there, that I wonder about how Bill looks at McDaniels now. Does Bill look at McDaniels and say, well, I got to watch out for this guy now. He's in the owner's pocket too. And so they got him lined up to be the next coach. So, you know, now do I have to watch this? Is this why, what's the guy's name from Arkansas?
Brett Bielema.
Yeah. Is that why, you know, he's here?
Yes.
That Bill needs a confidant. He's got to have some sort of
Bobo.
Yeah. He needs support on his side too, to balance out the scales a little bit. Like, you know, I do. I wonder about how the I wonder about the McDaniels relationship with Bill now. I do.
Okay. And then there's this. Was this yesterday that you gave me your blazing hot conspiracy theory about what happened on the draft?
Oh, yes.
Draft day? How about this one, Maz? Listen to this. Go ahead, Murray.
Well, so if Belichick was negligent in how he handled the Jimmy Garoppolo trade and the return was only the second round draft pick, what's to say that he also wasn't negligent on draft day when it came to drafting a quarterback? We know how rich this draft was with quarterback talent. They had a million picks. There was rumors of them moving up to take even Josh Rosen or Baker Mayfield. But who was still around where they stood pat at 23 and 31?
Kid from Louisville.
Lamar Jackson.
And who went to work him out personally?
Josh.
That's right. And just days before the draft.
And again, who gave him the sausage emoji little treatment on an Instagram post? Do you remember this? Do you remember Brady giving Lamar Jackson some love?
Thought, at the time, we thought it might have been an Under Armour thing, but it was Brady.
And he called him like a warrior or something like that.
Yeah.
So, okay, you get to pick number 31. Lamar Jackson's dropped. He's still there. Josh has to be thinking, wow, I worked this kid out. It feels like there's been the handshake deal that he's going to be the next head coach of this team.
Brady has the sign of approval.
Yeah, I'm going to get my guy. We're going to take Lamar Jackson. He fell to us. And then Bill looks at him and says, We know your track record with drafting quarterbacks. And he selects Sony Michel.
Oh, I can totally see that. I'm in.
And
I mean,
while I,
that's
and
look, not a hard sell for well, me.
I mean, again, Belichick's mindset being, you want me to draft the next quarterback? I did that already,
I
Robert.
Had him.
I did it.
So this is what I was saying the other day about when they didn't take one in the first round.
You want the next quarterback? Do that on your own time. I had the guy. You didn't want him. So now you want a quarterback? You do that on your time. I'm still running the draft.
Yes.
Running back.
I was told I have to surround Tom with talent. You've left me with Tom. I'll get him a tackle, I guess. Maybe he can play that position and Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel, because running backs are in vogue a little bit right now. Oh, that's what we're going to take in the first round. Now, I support those picks. I did. I don't think that Lamar Jackson is going to end up being anything good in this league, but something to keep an eye on. And I wouldn't put that past him, considering how he handled the Jimmy Garoppolo trade.
Oh, I totally wouldn't. The only question is who he's trying to spite. If not, and it might be multiple people.
The world.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
Bill, Josh, it's Josh, Tom, and Robert.
I mean, Robert's definitely in there. Because we actually had this discussion a couple of days ago. And I said, you know, now they get to the end of the first round, you want me to take a quarterback? I had him. You made me trade him. Screw you. I'll take some clown out of LSU in the seventh round. I'll go take some, seriously, some mannequin who played at LSU, some, you know, what do they call them, cigar store Indians that they used to have, some totem pole. I'll go get him in the seventh round. You're on your own time in the next quarterback. When I'm gone, you and your and McDaniels and your fifth son, Brady, you can go pick the next guy. I'm out.
I'm too busy sexting my guy out in San Francisco.
Can you believe they wanted me to take another quarterback? It's 3 a.m. here. Nice and quiet here in Nantucket. Just wanted you to know that even though I only received a second-round pick for you, you'll always be worth at least four number ones in my eyes. Eggplant emoji.
The eggplant emoji I do like.
Okay, final hour. Red Sox and the Eovaldi trade and David Dombrowski's reaction to it. You could have had Zach Britton, but they chose Eovaldi. How do you feel about that? Or they're just lying through their teeth. How do you feel about that little situation? And Bill Belichick's performance the last couple of days, how he's acted at the podium, how he's addressed some of these big issues surrounding the team. And oh, guess who spoke today? Face-to-face, man-to-man. Guess who did it? Details in the update here with Murray. No commercials. We come back and discuss.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.